Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively bringing it to you from Dallas, Texas. We are in Arlington currently. Luke and I, after the aftermath of Tuesday night's sweep at the hands of the Texas Rangers, we're going to be back out on the road on Friday at Drug City, celebrating my 56th year on the planet. I turned 55 on Saturday, as well as Jim Palmer and Kiko Garcia's birthday this weekend. Stacey Keebler and everybody else celebrating. Good Librans. We'll be celebrating by giving away Raven scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. We'll have those on Friday in the afternoon, as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, and our newest sponsors at Jiffy Lube MultiCare joining us for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'll be getting some more dates out now that we'll have a little bit more time on our hands, including on Sunday, to get back to Ravens football. Primary purple care around here will be Sunday morning. We'll be the Hollywood Casino in Perryville. Big doings up there for a British breakfast, and all eyes will turn on Tottenham as the Ravens try to undo what they did in Pittsburgh. Been a bad week already. When's the last time we won anything, Luke? When's the last time like somebody won a game here?
Yeah, I even saw someone on my timeline and social media make mention. Now all we need to cap this lousy sports week off is the Ravens to go to London and repeat what they did 6 years ago. I was just like, wow, it's been a rough week.
Yeah. So for me, with what happened with the Orioles, what ifs and the things, you know, if Henderson, the hit and run with Aaron Hicks in game one, and maybe they can make something happen there. The thing's so far gone, that they were beaten so soundly, so thoroughly, that I think anything sounds like an excuse. But where are you on the Kramer-Gibson start on Tuesday night in the near short term to say mistake, not mistake? I mean, obviously, Evaldi, you mentioned Gibson having postseason experience, but not real experience in the way Evaldi did. But I will wonder whether Kramer didn't feel suited to go out there for what was happening in Israel. I had Mike Rosenfeld on. We talked a lot about Jerusalem and his trip over there. You can hear that at Baltimore Positive as well. I tweeted that he didn't look up to the start, and I just want to be gentle. It's a knockout game. It is what it is for the team, but maybe Gibson was the right call.
Maybe. Maybe at the same time, I wouldn't have been exactly shocked if Kyle Gibson had maybe not that extreme of a struggle, but he could have had his struggles. And we talked about this a lot with Gibson over the last couple months of the season. He was either good and would give you really solid, dependable outings at those points, but he also had a lot of clunkers as well. So I hear you on that. I certainly think it's at least worth questioning. At the same time, if Kyle Gibson gets shelled and knocked out in the second or third inning, what's everyone saying then? Oh, you should have thrown Dean Kramer. He has more upside and, you know, more swing and miss ability. Just wasn't good enough. And look, to your point, you want to be sensitive, understanding this is a young man who pitched for Team Israel. You know, he's got family in Israel. There was a lot on his mind. In fact, I even asked Kyle Gibson in the post-game clubhouse, not so much about Kramer specifically, but Kramer and Grayson Rodriguez. And, you know, what do you say to young guys coming off of, you know, let's face it, some of their absolute worst outings of the entire season when they come on that stage? And
oh, that messes with your head in October, November, December,
Sure, it does. But Kyle Gibson got emotional even talking specifically about Kramer and, you know, what he went through or what is still going through with what's going on in Israel right now. But yeah, I mean, I'll hear you on asking that question. Do I find it to be something that I'm holding Brandon Hyde's feet to the fire over? Not really. You know, I think when it comes down to this, when John Means was ruled out for the ALDS, and who knows if he would have pitched in the ALCS if they had gotten past Texas, but we knew that all of this was tenuous in terms of just how their pitching was set up. You knew, okay, Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez, they're 1-2. Neither of them have pitched in October, but boy, they pitched great. Bradish all year, Rodriguez in the second half of the season. You're hoping John Means, you know, that was something we talked about for months and months, the hope, never really an expectation, but a hope that he'd be able to pitch. But you know, when he pitched as well as he did in those four starts in September, you're thinking, hey,
we got our hopes up.
This might have the makings of, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's going to be a historic October rotation, but there's some upside here. If these young guys can kind of, if these young guys can be Jim Palmer against Sandy Koufax in 1966, not that the Rangers, you know, not that I'm comparing Eovaldi or Jordan Montgomery to Sandy Koufax, but you've got something there potentially. And it didn't work out. You know, they clearly, they weren't ready for this stage, you know, just by the sheer reality of what the results were. That's not to say they won't be ready for it next year or the year after that, or that these guys won't eventually be really good pitchers in October, but you know, it wasn't their time. That was evident. So, but yeah, I'll hear you on, you know, maybe you go with the veteran. And look, before we found out about Means prior to game one, and keep in mind, that was something we found out just a couple hours before the scheduled first pitch for game one. You know, we had talked about this. I was intrigued about Kramer coming out of the pen in kind of a swingman role, like Kevin Gausman back in 2014, which worked out nice for the Orioles at that point in time. But you said it, you can nitpick a couple things in this series, but by and large, they just weren't good enough. I mean, there aren't really that many moments you can point to and say, oh, wow, if that had happened, maybe this. You mentioned the hit and run in the ninth inning in game one. You know, Grayson Rodriguez maybe got squeezed on a couple pitches in the second inning. Does he get out of it then? I don't know if he does. Does that mean he's going to pitch well in the third inning? You know, you can kind of go through a few spots here and there. You know, Kramer, I think the 15 pitch at bat to start the second really put him in a different place. And then the Rangers just, you know, they pounded him after that. But you know, both those guys struggled to put hitters away. And that goes back to kind of the, you know, the overall point that we talked more about with the bullpen, but in those specific starts for these young guys, even though they struck out plenty of batters over the course of the year, and I think they'll continue to strike out plenty of batters, but you know, it is tough when you have a team that you can't seem to put guys away with two strikes and they're fouling off pitches and extending at bats. I mean, my goodness, Corey Seager, you and I, as we're talking, he walked two more times in this series. You know, I mean, it's just,
well, they treated him like Mickey Mantle, right? I mean, they really did.
He kind of was Mickey Mantle this year, though. I mean, go look at his numbers when he missed a quarter of a season. But I mean, they just weren't good enough. And that sounds, I'm not trying to be dismissive about you and I, the fact that you and I have to talk about this and break it down, but
I wish there were more to break down. I mean, yeah, exactly, I wish there were more meat on the bone here to say ifs and buts and candies and nuts. But I mean, 101 victories is, and I don't want to say they did it with smoke and mirrors, but from a pitching perspective, they did it with smoke and mirrors. From a pitching perspective of how you would think a 101 win team would be, Bradish came on, but Rodriguez wasn't around. Means wasn't available.
Right.
And I guess in modern baseball, the notion that these guys going five, six, seven innings in the case of Eovaldi on Tuesday night, seven plus, you would say that that's the complete outlier on that. We can expect that. But I would like to expect that if they win 94 games next year, something much more modest and something much more normal, and they finish as a wild card because somebody gets up and runs, Tampa, Toronto, whatever, in the division, that if they win 94 again or 96 in 2025 or whatever, it would be, and maybe this is the old guy in me, but it would be with three or four horses that Bradish would come back and be that guy again next year. Rodriguez would be that guy. Means would be healed, and next year you get 31 starts out of him. That's what I'm talking about. A real rotation, yeah, as you old guy, not McNally and Cuellar and Palmer,
sure,
but just something that looks like Chen and Gonzalez and Tillman, you know, just something that's reliable every fifth day.
Yeah, and let's be fair, that rotation wasn't that highly regarded.
I understand that.
Right. No, but I agree with you, Nestor. But we
at least knew who was pitching when the postseason began, and the guys were healthy then.
Sure, no question about that. And the fact, because I just made mention of it a couple minutes ago, the fact that their rotation was in a place that you could put Kevin Gausman in the bullpen, right? And Kevin Gausman was young at that point in time, but he had pitched well the second half of the 2014 season and was still in the bullpen. So, you know, I don't know if I'd say it's smoke and mirrors as much as that. It was just very, it was very well defined where their value was coming from a pitching standpoint. I mean, Felix Bautista, even missing the final six, you know, 5.5, 6 weeks of the season, was their most valuable pitcher out of the bullpen by such an overwhelming margin. I mean, this is one of the most valuable relief pitchers in all of baseball. Go look at what his wins above replacement was for a reliever. Go look at what his win probability added was, you know, which is, you know, that really measures clutch factor, right? That really measures high leverage. The number of times that he came in and, you know, on the road and pitch multiple innings to get a save or get a win in extra innings. So, you know, you miss that. And while I don't think Felix Bautista, based on how this series played out, you know, two blowouts and the other game you lose 3-2, I'm not sure how pivotal Bautista would have been. But the point is, he was so instrumental in getting them to 101 wins. And Bradish was so instrumental all year in doing that. And Grayson Rodriguez is a big reason why they won this division and got to 101 wins rather than, you know, 95 and being the wild card and finishing a few games behind the Rays. But you're right. You do look at it and say, can you add not just those guys improving and, you know, whatever else is coming through the minor league system, which, you know, they don't have an assortment of pitching prospects, but they have some. You know, some guys that we'll talk about as we get into the offseason that could be a factor for them next year. But for me, right off the bat, and I don't have the free agent list in front of me, you know, in terms of who's going to be available out there on the open market, but I want to see this team aim higher than Jordan Lyles 2 years ago, Kyle Gibson this past year. Upgrade there. And that doesn't mean it has to be an ace, mind you. Nathan Eovaldi is not a true ace, you know, but he would be a guy that, you know, he was a guy, and this is why I was so, you know, intrigued by the idea of him specifically. He'd be a top half of the rotation guy. And again, that brand.
You have to pay him. You have to pay him.
Well, but 2 years, $34 million is not paying a pitcher. I mean, it's
two years, $34 million.
It is for the
John
Orioles.
Angelos's.
Granted. But my point is, if we're talking about scenarios for this team to take the next step in October, that's what I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about a $150 million commitment to a starting pitcher, but a guy like that, that would be clearly an upgrade over where they've been with Gibson, with Lyles the previous year, and someone that would slot into the top half of your rotation. Someone that you would say, you know what? We're hoping that Bradish or Grayson Rodriguez, take your pick, the order, we're hoping there are legit 1-2 moving forward. And I'm fine with that mindset. But if that's going to be your mindset, make sure you go out and get a very legitimate number three, because I'm not writing off John Means by any stretch of the imagination.
By the way, a $17 million pitcher would add, you know, 35% to their payroll. It's unbelievable, but
it would still be a payroll that ranks nowhere near the top or even really the middle at that point.
Well,
in time.
I think you're getting to the core of, yeah, you know, my disbelief in this organization, which makes, I mean, we're sitting here in Arlington, Texas, and they just played playoff games and they just went on a tear. And I can't sit here and say, John Angelo's bad boy, but, you know, they could have done more. They should have done more last offseason. Here we are again. When things get to the desk of John Angelos or TJ Brightman or the business people, Greg Bader, who's now running the place, when it gets to them, I have zero confidence. I have as much confidence in that as I do you getting a clubhouse badge from them. You know, like literally, like I have zero confidence because they've never hit the ball when it matters in these cases. And this is going to be a business decision. I mean,
sure.
We know Elias is a genius. We know if Elias in a flat world might have said, let's go get Eovaldi, and Eovaldi might have said, I'm not going to pitch with those ragamuffins in Baltimore. That's over with now. And I'm not going to pitch in Baltimore because I'm going to give up too many home runs. That's over with now, right? I'm not going to pitch in Baltimore because I'm not going to get run support. That's over now. They hit the ball. They're going to hit. So other than the money itself, I don't want to hear anything about we had to give this up, or we're not giving up our Colton Cowsers and our prospects for, like, no, write a check. And then John Angelos, as he told the New York Times, is going to say, well, where were all the people when we were playing the Rays? Where's that money coming from? And I don't have the answer to that. I mean, the answer to that is when you and your family are dead and gone and somebody decent owns the team, maybe a lot of people would feel better about giving you money.
Well, I mean, look, I'm not going to touch the last thing you said, but yeah, there are questions about this organization. And when it comes to increasing payroll, when it comes to making some bold moves, and look, I'm not going to completely absolve Mike Elias from the standpoint of, it doesn't just have to be paying guys and paying free agents specifically, although certainly at the very least, you want to pay your own, follow the Atlanta Braves formula that, okay, you don't have to go out and sign a free agent on the open market to a lucrative contract, but go re-sign, go extend Gunnar Henderson then. Go.
Does Gunnar Henderson or Adley Rutschman have to be signed by April 1st? For in your mind, do they have to get one of them done to give some people some confidence? I don't know. I've been watching this for 30 years, dude. Like, I wouldn't – anything that sounds reasonable never feels reasonable when it comes to these people. I mean, I'm being honest with you. I mean, it sounds really reasonable that, like, that this is the way the Braves would do it. This is the way the Rays would do it. This is the way a good organization would do it. They'd look at Gunnar Henderson, who just hit 500 in the playoffs. He's 21 years old. They'd say, all right, this – we're going to go in on this guy. And I don't even know what that does for Rutschman, right? They're a little bit of the Bobsey twins for now, but then Holiday's going to come. And who knows if Westberg or Cowser next year aren't the dude all of a sudden, because they certainly have pedigrees to be dudes, right?
Yeah. And I mean, look, does it have to happen by opening day? No, of course not. Because I mean, Gunnar Henderson has 5 more years of club control. I mean, Adley Rutschman's going to have 4 more years. I mean, that's just where it is. So it's always a moving target when you're talking about those types of young players where you're doing that. And I'll say this, they aren't the same player because, I mean, Adley Rutschman plays a much more physically demanding position and he's 3 years older. I mean, I'll be full disclosure. If you want to hear kind of an unfiltered opinion,
Adley Rutschman will wind up playing somewhere else in his career.
I don't know. This is me. And this is not saying, this has nothing to do with the fact that he hit 083 in the division series. So let's squash that.
You love Adley Rutschman.
For anyone who's listening, I love Adley Rutschman. At the same time, am I all that hot and bothered and eager to go out and give a catcher a seven or eight year contract, which would buy out his first couple of years of free agency? If it was an 8-year contract, 3 years of free agency, and you're talking about a guy who's into his early 30s at that point in time, I think for an organization, when I'm viewing this realistically, and maybe this isn't even realistic, but trying to look at this in a balanced way for a team that I never expect is going to have a $250 million payroll. If you're extending a player, I'm not sure extending a catcher into his early 30s is the best way to go about doing that. So my point would be, I would push all my chips in on trying to sign Gunnar Henderson. For his client, though, that's not the easiest thing to do, even if you are going to say, hey, we'll give you a blank check, based on what these arbitration projections would be for you. And
Scott Boras would say, how blank?
Yeah. And he would say, right, exactly. And well, how about instead of buying out his first 4 years of free agency, how about we just do the first 2, right? So, because Boras is always about trying to get his guys to the open market. So point is, it's not going to be easy, even if you have an owner who's completely willing to do it. There's still some obstacles involved in doing that, but
well, it's sort of like smoking a bandit because it ain't never been done around here.
Sure.
In the John Angelos era, certainly. Right. And when it was done in the Peter era, it was done for Chris Davis and not Manny Machado.
Yeah, exactly. And Manny Machado would have cost a lot more, but also better player, younger player.
We wouldn't have gotten all these great players had we not stunk so much. I speak for the organization when I say that.
Although they still, even if they had found a way to sign Manny Machado, they still would have stunk for at least a couple years. But anyway, to go back to what you were saying, and I don't want to make this too much about Rutschman versus Gunnar, but there are lots of other things they can do beyond just an extension, beyond signing a free agent. You mentioned some names. I mean, there are guys at AAA Norfolk that are blocked right now. Go look at what Joey Ortiz did at Norfolk right now. And where is his place other than maybe he takes the place of Jorge Mateo as far as becoming, or Ramon Urias becoming kind of the super utility guy. But, you know, there are guys like Connor Norby where it's just at Triple A have had success, but it's like, where are they going to play? A year ago, you and I were talking about Kyle Stowers. He's completely forgotten at this point. I'm not saying that to be disrespectful to Kyle. You know, he's a good young kid and has had a lot of minor league success. But
Cedric Mullins was forgotten a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah,
he was buried and came back. Right. So,
well, and I'm not even my point is, you're not going to be able to keep all these guys. So at some point in time, this is where I will put John Angelos and ownership and the business side and the financial side aside for a moment and say, Mike Elias and Sig Meidel in the front office, at some point in time, you're going to have to, and I don't mean your number 22 prospect in your system, but at some point in time, it might be that you've got to make a difficult call on a Colton Cowser or maybe a Jordan Westberg, who I still like. You know, I still think did some nice things, but didn't exactly light the world on fire after being called up. And although I really did not like the platoon that they insisted on using with him and Frazier did nothing in this postseason and really did nothing the last 2 months of the season. I don't expect him to be back, but, you know, that aside, you know, it might be that they don't love the pitchers on the open market that you go trade for a veteran starting pitcher, who, by the way, most, you know, veteran starting pitchers are going to have, you know, money, you know, a contract that's already going to be on the books, you know, so it might be in concert that you trade a Colton Cowser to go out and get some team's number two or number three starter who has 2 years left on his deal and has some postseason experience and would be, okay, not that ace, but you have Bradish, you have Grayson Rodriguez, you still feel great about those guys. I'm not down on Grayson Rodriguez after the way he pitched in game two, far from it, but bring in a veteran pitcher who's an upgrade over the Jordan Lyles and the Kyle Gibson, you know, that category that the Orioles have worked in these past two off seasons. So there are different ways to do this. There is not any one specific thing that I feel that they must do per se, but I will say this, and this goes back to what you were talking about with John Angelos, but I would also put Mike Elias in this category. I do wonder if from a long-term perspective, perhaps the way that this series played out could help in terms of creating a little more urgency to say, you know what? We love our young core and we love these guys that, you know, we've been able to take a conservative approach in terms of keeping our prospects and not making a ton of trades, not making a ton of free agent signings. We love our young core. If they had lost in five games to the Rangers and four of those games were one-run games, you could have probably, you know, if you're John Angelos thinking in terms of, oh, well, you know, I don't want to spend money, you know, I've got all these different things got to do, whatever. If you're Mike Elias in terms of, you know, being conservative, he's been very measured in how he's built this thing. Let's call a spade a spade. That's not even a knock. That's just how it's been done. Hasn't been overly aggressive with trades and things of that nature. But if you had seen the Orioles lose a nail biter of a five game series, you probably could talk yourself into not doing a whole lot this offseason whatsoever. With this ending the way that it did, I think it does create a little more urgency to, you know, and I'm not saying to be brash here, you know, not, you know, don't be hasty, you know, don't do anything foolish, you know, don't trade Jackson Holliday for, you know, to go back to the Dylan Cease conversation from late July, you know, you're not trading Jackson Holliday or any of your top prospects.
Well, I think you would, Mike Elias would go into John if they had a relationship that was that kind of relationship and say, Hey, we're not going to go into October with this next year. We can't. Yeah. And we might only win 92 games, but we need to know what we're doing. We need to have an October plan that isn't Dean Kramer or Kyle Gibson with the season on the line because Means is unavailable and Batista's hurt.
Yeah. And look, you can never foresee what's going to happen. I mean, heaven forbid if Bradish or Grayson Rodriguez have physical issues next year, it's going to hurt you because these guys they've arrived to me. Like we can talk about in terms of October legacy or anything like that, but you know, Kyle Bradish is going to get Cy Young votes. You know, he's going to be on that list, you know, whether he's fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, whatever it is, he's going to be on that list. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez, when you see Vegas and all these sports books put out all these different odds for Cy Young Award in the AL, you're going to see both those guys on that list somewhere. Not a favorite, but they're going to be on that list, and you're going to see them in terms of having odds for something like that and being, at least someone that's mentioned in relevant terms. So, it's not as though the cupboard's bare, but yeah, you need to fortify this thing. You want to strengthen this thing. I mentioned Adam Frazier. I don't, quite frankly, Nestor, and I don't say this with any disrespect to these guys, because, they have played in October and they made contributions at different times, but I don't really want to see a lineup that has Adam Frazier or Aaron Hicks in it next October. I want to see better than that, and I think a lot of that's going to come down to fully expect to see Jackson Holliday on this team, most likely by opening day. If he has the kind of spring you expect him to have, I think there's a great chance you're going to see him on the opening day roster. And whether he's playing short and Gunner's at third, whether he's playing second and Gunner's at short, they'll have time to iron that out. But, they have pieces coming, but I still want to see them fortify. And I don't want it to be, a head scratch and give Adam Frazier the money that they gave him this offseason. Go out and get it. I don't want it to be this coming year's version of Kyle Gibson, who, look, I love as a person, and I think was very influential and positive on these guys in the way that Jordan Lyles was a year ago, but they're limited. They have a limited ceiling. You're talking about number five starters for teams who have more established playoff caliber starting rotations. So I want
to
see the Orioles.
About guys you didn't go to, the guy you went and signed the offseason, you didn't even go to him with the season on the line. You didn't even reach to him.
Exactly. I want them to go sign a starting pitcher. And again, it doesn't have to, I don't know who that ace would even be. Like again, I haven't looked because I haven't been focused on free agency. I've been focused on the Orioles in the playoffs. I don't need you to target a guy that's a number one starter, but I want you to target a guy that the moment you sign him, you say, there's no doubt he's going to be in our postseason rotation, assuming he does what he's done in his career and assuming everyone's healthy and all that. Target that guy.
Well, that's the way the Rangers felt about Eovaldi when they signed him.
Exactly. That's why I wanted to see the Orioles target someone like that. And again, Nathan Eovaldi, 2 years, $34 million. It's not this immense financial commitment that's going to set you back or put you behind the eight ball in the way that, the Chris Davis deal was a massive failure. But, a one or a two or a three-year deal, even if it ends up not working out, even if you're talking about someone who gets hurt, that's not crippling you long term in the way that, you sign Chris Davis to a 7 year deal and he's terrible. Yeah, that is going to impact you. So,
Luke, you have no idea what $17 million represents. That's what Mike Elias has had to deal with, right? Or not really Mike, because he hasn't dealt with Peter Angelos. All right, look, we're going to continue to talk about this at length. We're going to be at Drug City on Friday for my 55th birthday for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We'll be upstairs at the tasting room at the Fountain. Stop by. I'm going to try to drag Luke over there. We'll have some other guests. It was very hard to do the Maryland Crab Cake Tour here, thinking we're going to Houston or Minnesota next week or back to Camden Yards this weekend. Who knows? But we'll be there on Friday. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We'll have Raven scratch-offs to give away, as well as our friends at Window Nation. 866-90-NATION, and our newest sponsor, Jiffy Lube MultiCare, back on with us here for all of football season. Speaking of football season, Hollywood Casino on Sunday, bright and early. We're doing a proper British breakfast and some French toast, from what I understand. I'm going to get the salmon BLT. Come on up. It's $30 for the brunch and the buffet, all you can eat unlimited. You also get entered into a $500 cash play tournament, as well as wing eating competition. That apparently I'm one of the judges. I will not be one of the participants in this, but I might get some wings on Sunday morning. Come on up, Hollywood Casino in Perryville on Sunday. I'm going to be working to get the Crab Cake Tour together. We're trying to figure out the rest of the month. The only saving grace in all of this Orioles getting eliminated thing is that I get to see John Mayer next Friday at the CFG Bank Arena. But other than that, it stinks. I got my Baltimore versus everybody shirt on. Luke and I up early in Arlington, licking our orange wounds, and at some point we'll turn the corner and start talking some Ravens football as well. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, AM 1570. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.